16. Fighting their way through the reconstituted soldier corps had really taken a toll. Britt, Gwen, Roy, and Martin put what they thought was a safe distance between themselves and the spot where eventually twice as many soldiers would appear, then unanimously agreed to rest for the night. They took turns keeping watch and ended up sleeping well into the next day. They still did not make great time, now being overtired from too much sleep. They covered about half the distance back to the mine, camped for the night again, and finally returned to the mines of Mortlach late on the next day. The miners fell into an awed silence as they entered the mine, Gwen in the lead, carrying the ornate birdcage holding the frozen mechanical bird. At first, they worried that the miners would see that something was wrong with Oban, but those fears died when they reached Blandoch, the head of the mining guild. He stood along the back wall, next to an identical birdcage in which an identical mechanical bird was whistling and fluttering joyfully. Blandoch looked like a child on Christmas morning as he took the second cage from Gwen. He peered at the frozen bird inside. The other bird, in the cage that sat on the plinth, chirped happily, and Blandoch, never removing his eyes from the frozen canary, giggled with delight. Blandoch placed the cage in his hands on the plinth, knocking the other bird cage on the ground in the process as if he did not see it. When the new cage was sitting on the plinth for which it was clearly designed, the Oban in the cage that had just clattered to the floor flew a neat loop-the-loop in its cage and landed back on its perch, which was impressive, as the cage was on its side and the perch was perpendicular to the ground. The miners cheered. Blandoch stared delightedly at the frozen bird, while the non-frozen copy's tweets and chirps rose from the floor. Blandoch turned to Gwen and the others and said,
"You've lived up to your part of the bargain. You've returned our beloved friend Oban to his rightful home."
Blandoch faced his fellow miners, spreading his arms wide and raising his voice.
"And now that he is back, we miners can mine again!"
The miners cheered. Blandoch turned back and in a quieter voice said,
"Now it is time for us to fulfill our half of the bargain. You came looking for Dailawine, did you not?"
Martin said, "Yeah, I guess."
"And you will have it," Blandoch said.
He leaned down and picked up his golden pickaxe, which was partially covered by Oban's cage. Lifting the axe sent the cage and its twittering occupant rolling across the floor. He grabbed a lantern that was hanging from a spike on the wall.
"Now that Oban is back," he said, "I can go mine it for you."
Blandoch walked toward the mine entrance at the rear of the chamber. Roy said,
"You forgot your bird."
Blandoch did not seem to hear him. Roy continued,
"Miners need canaries to tell them when there's too much CO2.
"Yeah,"
Britt agreed.
"Then why isn't he taking the bird with him?"
Britt said,
"Maybe because it's not a real bird." "Or a real mine,"
Gwen added.
"Or a real miner,"
Martin said. Blandoch got to the mine entrance, paused, then took a single step into the shaft. He looked at the ceiling and walls of the mine, then focused on a seemingly empty patch of ground. Blandoch put down the lantern and swung the pickaxe downward. It stopped abruptly and rung as if it had struck something solid, although it had stopped in midair. He put down the pick, then mimed as if he were lifting something heavy and round with both hands. He carried the invisible sphere back and presented it to Gwen, saying,
"Gentlemen, you have done us a great service this day, and it is our honor to present you with this Dailawine."
Gwen looked at the empty space between Blandoch's hands, then looked to her compatriots and shrugged. The three of them shrugged back, so she turned and put her hands out, accepting whatever it was that Blandoch was offering. Blandoch carefully placed the nothing in Gwen's arms, and she immediately let out a startled grunt and started shaking and sinking toward the ground.
"It weighs a ton," she said. "Help!"
Martin dove forward to help her carry her burden, but he could not see her burden and ended up jamming his fingers on the void, which caused him to yelp in pain and surprise. The force of Martin striking the invisible mass caused Gwen to lose control of it. It rolled out of her hands, away from Martin. Gwen had not seen Roy lurching toward her on the other side to try to help her with her load. Because her load was invisible, she did not see it land directly on Roy's foot with an audible thud. Roy yelled and cursed and reached down with both hands and pushed whatever it was off his foot. While Roy checked for broken toes and Martin checked for broken fingers, Britt went to the spot where she estimated that a heavy, round object would stop rolling. She carefully explored the area with her foot until she found what she was looking for. She crouched down, felt the contours of the object, and when she was convinced that she knew where it was and what shape it was, Britt sat on it. She seemed to hover in an impossible squatting position.
Okay, Britt thought. We've got something invisible that we're going to have to transport who knows how far. We have to do something to make it visible. Think, Britt. What is the most visible thing you know? Something you can't miss. Something obnoxiously obvious.
Britt thought for a moment before saying,
Martin, can I borrow your robe?